the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. Here, this is the place where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Welcome home, Brains.
Coming to you straight from San Diego, California, let's welcome our host, April Mahoney.
So, Phoenix, what are you doing there in the UK, girl?
Well, so I'm actually over here in the US now as an unofficial ambassador for Her Majesty the Queen.
Really?
Yeah, unofficial in the sense that she's not actually paying me because she's cheap. A fact that not many people
frugal.
Know.
We want to say frugal. We don't want to say cheap. We don't like none cheap. The Queen ain't cheap.
Cheap and cheerful. That's what we say in England. Or exactly. Cheap as chips.
Cheap as chips. Those chips that go with that dry fish.
That's the one. That's the one. Yeah, yeah. And the warm beer.
Yes, I'm telling you, British, I am not a fan of your fish and chips. You need to come over here and let me cook you some catfish and some fried potatoes and some coleslaw. You will eat yourself into the abyss, okay? But fish and chips are not my favorite.
Sounds good to me. Sounds good to me. So the Queen asked me really to try to represent the UK in terms of culture. And so one of the things that I like to do for people is I like to perform a little bit of poetry. But don't panic. I know that some people hear the word poetry and they just kind of wince, but it will be fine. I'm going to do the poem. It's quite short. And then I'm going to give you a real-time translation of what the author is actually saying. Okay? Is that all right with you?
Yeah, absolutely, because I'm a poet. So, I appreciate that. Absolutely.
I've seen your poems and they are good stuff. So the first thing you have to do is you have to kind of assume a poetry position. So like,
I look quite stoic, huh? And then what we do is when we're feeling it, this is what we do. We don't clap. We hand clap.
Okay.
Fingers.
Yeah.
Okay.
And here's the English version. No sound whatsoever coming out of those fingers. It's pathetic. Okay. So.
Brains. Okay. I just want you to get to know my guest. That's Phoenix. Phoenix is about to rise right here on the Edge.
Okay.
Haynes or Hines, however you Americans want to say it or British want to say it.
As long as you don't give it the French pronunciation.
What's that?
Well, bonjour, Madame Haynes.
Ooh, okay.
And I think they know because I heard that I thought there was sarcasm in the shops of France.
Really? Oh my God. So do you want to begin with the poem or do you want to begin
let me begin with the poem.
All right, here we go.
Okay, so here we go. Behold, for morning in the bowl of night has flung the stone that put the stars to flight. And lo, the hunter of the east has caught the sultan's turret in a noose of light. Or as we say in Virginia, sun's up.
Okay, I need you to do that.
literally, the sun is up.
Oh, okay, all right. So,
yeah, that's it. That's, broadly speaking, the translation of that entire piece of quite wordy stuff is the bloke is looking out of his window and going, oh yeah, the sun's up.
You also did a short story that you have on YouTube. What was that?
The Stone Man.
Right.
So the Stone Man is a spiritual story. It's a tale of deception, cruelty, atonement, redemption. There's kind of quite big themes in there. And whenever I tell it, it feels completely real to me. It feels like I am the Stone Man. I lived that life. I did those things. And when I've performed it for live audiences, it changes the energy in the room. And it changes people's hearts, and I can feel it. It's kind of interesting at different levels.
That was an original piece of work? That was yours? Originally?
Yeah, that was mine. That was mine. It opens up with two lines of poetry, which I read in a book when I was about 13 or 14 years old. actually written by a friend of my mother's, and he quoted this poem, and the lines are, "For all the stone men shout at me and swear as they are not dead, and once I touched a broken girl and knew that marble bled." And I would read these and they would make me cry, just for years. I mean, like, so fast forward 40 years and these lines are just rolling around in my head, and I sat down at the computer and just, and out came this story about being the stone man.
Wow, that's beautiful. So roll back the stone. Tell my brain a little bit about you, how you showed up. And in case you guys are lost, you're on the edge with April Mahoney, the place where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. And we've got Phoenix. And Phoenix is originally from the UK, and she's visiting here in the US. And we just jumped right into the conversation because that's how we roll. You know, that's how artists and creatives are. We don't need a lot of time for preparation because our minds are always reeling. So tell us a little bit about you, your story, your history, and your journey, Phoenix.
Okay. So I was raised by wolves. No, sorry, not wolves, Welsh people. I always get those two confused.
Oh, my goodness.
I don't know how that happens. I think it's the singing. I'm not sure. So born and bred in London, East London, and basically, I wouldn't know what to say about myself. I was a communications advisor to the UK government for 15 years, married an American, and one day went home and shouted at him, "If you're American, why are we still here?" Subtext, "This is not the life of my dreams." And he said, "Okay, let's go." And by process, we ended up, he was originally from Philly, but we ended up in Lynchburg, Virginia. And I stood around for a year and a half thinking, I wonder what I'm doing here. And then angels showed up in my living room, and that was pretty much what I'm doing here.
So tell me what happened when you looked over and you saw a few angels. Tell us about that. Did that blow your wig back? Because I see you got your head shaved.
The thing I like most about this, so it is really hard to give yourself a haircut. I discovered when I invested in the shavy razory thing.
Oh yeah.
You can't do it. My barber makes a fantastic job of it, but in lockdown I thought, well, I could do that myself. Meow. Apparently not.
No, you have big divots in your head and your line won't be straight. It's awful.
Yeah, well, and I looked and went, yeah, I'll be better off bald. So this is called my wash and leave the house. Or not leave the house. Where were we? We were somewhere.
Okay. Yeah, you know what? Let's dial back. Let me ask you a question.
Yes, ma'am.
Why did you shave your head?
I actually have a thing about hair being on my ears. I cut and literally once I'd nibbled at the bits around the ears and it looked dreadful, I went for the whole thing. I find it very freeing. I never really cared much for hair. I have no interest in appearance particularly or fashion, as evidenced by my choice of clothing.
Oh, you're pretty stylish, honey. I posted a picture. I love that jacket you have on. I was going to see if I could borrow it. That's cute.
No, but you could drive up to Vancouver and see if the shop has another one.
Oh, okay. All right.
That is Canadian cow. And apparently the Canadian cows do turn blue in the winter because it's really cold.
Oh, I know. I used to work in Canada, right there in Calgary, girl. And it is brutally cold.
Yeah. Yeah.
So now you've shaved your head for independence and freedom, but there's also a bit of a rebellion when women shave their head because they are making a statement. And Brains, not all women that shave their head are suffering, you know, from cancer or anything like that. Sometimes it's just really to make a statement of freedom of who they are. You know, we have a thing, especially in the Black culture, that says, you know, a woman's hair is her glory. Mm-hmm. But what I think is her glory is the brain that's underneath that and the boldness that it takes to step outside yourself and to find yourself. And it doesn't matter whether you have hair or not. That doesn't equate to who you are as a woman. Would you agree?
I absolutely agree. And I've seen it. I mean, the bald-headed look on people, well, on other women before, and thought, wow, that's really bold. Mm-hmm. And it just, it is something that appealed to me. all my friends are pointing out that I'm going to be cold in the winter, but you know, there are hats. I like it. I look in the mirror. It makes me happy that I look like this. So,
well, and that's all good. That matters. And yeah. It makes me happy. You know, it makes me happy too, that you are comfortable within your skin. So girl, yeah. Get back to the angels. What happened with the angels? Tell me when they showed up.
So, middle of August, 2007, I'd been watching television downstairs. So it being Virginia, it was kind of hot and humid and unpleasant. I went upstairs and I had an altar, a Buddhist altar in the living room with blue lights all around it. I stood in the doorway, looked over, and there were lights around the altar that were not plugged into the electrical supply. So the question I was going to ask you, do you allow people to swear on your podcast or shall I just mime?
To a degree. I mean, you know, it just depends. Okay. If it adds to the conversation, yes. If it is the conversation, no.
I think I'd been watching The Sopranos, which is where I learned most of my usage American swear words. And I stood in the doorway and just went, oh, flip. That's a paraphrase. Oh, flip. No, they're not plugged in. And oh, you know, so, I mean, it's angels. I know that now. I probably suspected it then, but they scared me half to death. And I just thought I should run. I should run out of the house and run up the street. You know, and like you wouldn't want to swear in front of angels, but it was kind of an intense experience to see things that I knew, like the day before, I couldn't have seen them.
I saw a physical representation. You saw the light. You saw light. The aura. You felt the energy.
Light.
Okay.
Lights. And they, when I see them, this is what they look like. This is exactly what the NEXI, which is what they're called, NEXI, this is what they look like. Oh, wow. Except they're flashing on and off.
Mm.
Like this.
Are you sure that you didn't put something in your tea? Smoke a little some, you know what I'm saying? Were you
I'm pretty sure. And I mean, one of the questions you ask yourself is, do I still remember who the president of the day is? Did I put socks on first before my shoes? And once you've gone through the list of questions and gone, okay, I'm not clearly certifiably insane.
Right.
Then you look for the other explanation, which is divine beings just showed up in my living room and let me stand there going,
right. Now, see, I'm not visited. I have been visited by angels. I've been visited by animal spirits, and mm-hmm. I've been visited by and haunted by human spirits numerous times. So again, we're kind of joking at it, but seriously, there is some undeniable feelings. There's an undeniable sound. There's an undeniable light. I would see lights and colors that I have never seen in the rainbow before.
Yeah.
So when that happens to you, there is a shock factor because you're second guessing yourself and you're going like, what is this? You know? And what is the purpose? Why do they come to visit you? Did they bring you a message?
Well, yes, they did. And essentially what they wanted me to do was to allow them to communicate with other people through me. They brought a whole system of energy healing for me to learn and unpick and to teach people. That's pretty much what I've been doing the last 13 years, is helping people to discover their spiritual purpose through this healing system that they've taught me.
So now you are a conduit for this spirituality.
Yeah.
What's your ROI? Because, you know, what is your return on your investment? You're making an investment in this. This is not just, and I don't mean monetary. I mean, you know, really, are your wings going to be expanded once you get to the hereafter? What is it that you get out of helping people and being a vehicle for the angels?
So the angels are the next eye. They describe themselves as the voice of the Christ consciousness. And the Christ consciousness is the qualities of love, peace, and forgiveness of which all things are made, including you and including me. In allowing them to flow through me and to flow into other people, we expand love, peace, and forgiveness for everyone that I work with, but also for me. I have that sense of spiritual expansion when I allow this. It's like I become more of an expression of love. I become more peaceful. I become more forgiving. And those are amazing, amazing benefits in a world that can seem quite harsh, quite difficult, quite cruel and capricious on occasion. But always to come back to that spiritual truth of heaven is a state of mind, and it can be here and it can be now. If only we let go of the things that stand in the way of love, peace, and forgiveness. So the return on my investment, I mean, the return on my time is a happy heart, a peaceful mind, a forgiving nature.
Well, that's good, because, you know, I like to ask that. Everybody has an investment in it. Now, is there a contradiction or a conflict? Because as you said, when you went upstairs, you did not go to a Christ altar, but you went to a Buddhist altar. But you came out with Christ angels.
Yeah, I did.
Christ. How do you find the connection? Because, you know, there's a lot of people out here that's going to be watching this, and they go, oh, well, you know, people are confused. No, there's a difference between spirituality and religion, brains. Okay, and so you need to know that. And we all work together for the good. So yeah. Explain to me how that all evolved.
So I got into practicing Buddhist meditation and liked the Buddhist philosophy of first do no harm, largely because I was a lifelong, slightly angry atheist. And I liked Buddhism because you could be spiritual but not have to believe in God. And that kept me, I mean, I think that was from about the end of 2001 sort of onwards. And then we find here I am in August 2007, and these angels turned up. And because of childhood experiences, I was quite personally resistant to Christianity. It had been used, I thought, as a stick with which to beat people rather than something that encouraged, I don't know, a more spiritual and gentle nature. They arrived in my house in that way at that time because I'd been meditating and beginning to release all of the grips on my thinking. They came for me, and in their arrival in the house, that was the moment when I knew that God was real.
Really?
Yeah, that was when the atheism just went whoop.
Yes,
straight out the window.
I know. When I'm telling you, because when God show up, he show out.
I don't believe he was playing.
No. He wasn't playing any games. Okay, so now you go downstairs and you tell your husband, baby, I've just been visited by some angels, and this is what's going on. I bet he looked at you like, you better shaving your head.
Yeah. The words cray cray, I believe.
Exactly. Got it.
Would have been used. I actually waited a couple of weeks because our atheism was one of the things we had in common. It was one of the things that we shared when we first, along with a fondness for a particular type of donut in England called a yum yum. We were big fans of atheism and big fans of yum yums. So I was quite concerned about what he would say, and finally actually kind of discussed it with the angels. And they said, all he needs to really know is that this doesn't change anything in your marriage and you're not going to leave him. So I started the conversation with, something really weird's happened, Bill, but don't worry, it's not going to change anything and I'm definitely not leaving you. And he was quite, I mean, it did rattle his cage a bit, but we loved each other and we just decided that we would operate on a basis of mutual respect. I would not proselytize to him. He would not mock me. And everything in every other respect beyond I'm now on a different spiritual path was the same between us, as loving and as happy as it had always been.
Oh, see, that's pretty cool. That's
it was cool. He was a cool guy. He was a really cool guy.
Because that usually is a divide immediately if you're not evenly yoked.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Well, I truly believe that, I mean, part of him has to have been engaged in that the process, the spiritual process, that it was okay with him that I was doing these things. He certainly liked the fact that it seemed to help me feel happy. And he really liked the fact that it meant I could help other people. Once I started teaching the healing system, the verbatim healing system, and I was holding groups and teaching people online and over the phone and, you know, around Virginia and beyond, he really liked that. He didn't understand it. He didn't want to do it. And I respected that. That wasn't his path. That's absolutely fine.
Wow. That's really good. So, you know, what I find interesting is that the angels come to you. And when it's for you, it's for you. It's undeniable. Mm-hmm. But they come in. They, you know, bypass him. Everything that's going on. They set up in your heart. They give mm-hmm. you work to do. They give you a doctrine and a sense of guidelines, because you're going to have to study. You just can't come out and just be talking some abracadabra to somebody and people start believing you. You know, mm-hmm. you really have to understand. You have to study. You have to know. You have to feel that. And then he's still cool with it. So what happened in his transition, if you don't mind me asking, as he passed? Did he connect at all with spirit? Or did he just say, you know, this is it?
He, so on the surface, he maintained his atheism right up to his dying breath. And I was completely respectful of that. I mean, up to and beyond his dying breath. But in that last week, he said a couple of things that really were not like him. One of which was when he stared at me and just said, "You do know I'm always with you, don't you?" And
that sounds like spirit to me.
I will drink to that, which was spirit, I believe, working through him. And then the experience, the manner of his passing was just really, really interesting. I had to call out a hospice nurse three times overnight, a day and a half or so before he passed. And at some point she told me a story about how the people that she'd worked with talked about being in a queue when they would die. It's like, well, I can't leave yet because I'm number five in the queue. There is a queue to jump off.
Oh my goodness.
And he became very agitated that particular night because he kept thinking he had to go somewhere. And he wasn't able to get out of the bed, but he was flailing and trying to get out of the bed until finally this hospice nurse said to him, "Well, where are you trying to go?" And he said, "Well, we're in a museum, aren't we? And we're meant to be in the next room." And she said, "Well, here's the thing, Bill. The museum has closed until tomorrow, and they're asking everybody to go home and take a rest until they open again tomorrow. What about that?" And he said, "Well, that sounds like a plan." And went straight off to sleep.
Oh, wow. Do you think that was some sort of metaphor?
Yeah, absolutely. He knew that he was crossing over to somewhere. Hmm. And he thought in what was left of his rational mind that he had to do it physically. And then the following, day and a half later, when he was actually passing, so the next night talked to me all the time and they said, "You need to go and sit in a different room." So I just left him with the hospice nurse and I went into a different room and they said, "Okay, he's next in the queue. He's next in line." Mm, mm, mm. And I went back into the room and said to the, kind of got the hospice nurse to, she was taking his pulse, just got her to kind of move out of the way. And I stood and I thought I was going to recite the Lord's Prayer to him, but instead they asked me to do a Buddhist chant that I'd learned back in the early 2000s on Mani Pami Ung. And you basically sing this chant, and it's four lines for one completion. And I sang the four lines, and at the end of the fourth line, he died.
Mm. Wow.
And off he went.
Okay.
Yes.
So where are you at in this life, death, quandary that we're in? Because you know what? People are tricked out, okay? The COVID has snatched them up like the coyote snatched up my dog, just kidnapping them. You're not able to be with your family. You're not able to give them their religious rites or rites of passage and nurture them. But the spirit is still there, and the angels are still there, and they're still carrying them up. What do you say to people that are in a difficult time right now, that just are in a state of flux, or they're in a state of pain, or they've lost someone? What do you say to them?
So one of the things, when I lost Bill, who was, as you can tell, the love of my life, when I lost him, I felt the grief was so hard that I begged God to take it away from me. And the answer I got, which started with no, was that grief is a necessary part of the human experience. And so grief, I believe, is something that we just have to go through, that we just have to allow. To people who are suffering, I would say this. You are so loved. You are so loved. And this will pass.
And when we say this will pass, what are we saying? Are we saying that there will become a point of comfort? There will come a point of understanding? There will come a point of glory? Because I believe in my spiritual journey, and I grew up, I'm not going to tell everybody all my business, but I grew up one religion. I found another religion, but I've been able to weave in and out of many religions and many spiritual transitions in my life. And what I have found is the universal message is peace and love. I don't care what you're talking about. But so many people are confused right now, Phoenix.
Yeah. It is a very confusing time. There is a lot of, there is global anxiety, and there is undeniable suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that in times like these, people who are in more secure circumstances, if they can allow the vision of other people's suffering to move them to compassion, then that does allow some good to come out of it. It feels to me quite strongly as though there is a bit of a battle between good and evil going on. And so ultimately we simply have to make a choice. Do we stand for good or do we not? I've made my choice. I believe you've made yours. I invite other people to make theirs. But in the end, light will win, love will win,
right. And
suffering ends.
And, you know, I've talked to many people around the world, and this is not the normal, okay, brains. This is something that we've never experienced before. You know, I've read it in my book of Revelations. I never thought that I would be living in a time to actually see this. I thought I'd be dead and gone and, you know, watching it with a bowl of popcorn from up in heaven.
Oh, there's a plot twist.
Exactly. But no such luck. I'm right in the throes. I'm right in the mix, as we say. And so I'm stirring the pot. Because I want other people to be as uncomfortable as I am. I'm not comfortable with this. It's not designed to be comfortable. You know, this 5D, this is a frequency. This is a universal alignment change. We've moved into the age of Aquarius. This is heavy brains. You guys just don't understand. You don't understand. You just think that there's some minor discord and you ain't happy with the president and your paycheck and, you know, we got the COVID. It's much more than that. And so I encourage you to hold on and to tap into whatever feels good to your soul. If that is being an atheist, be comfortable with that, but understand the truth. The truth. Okay? And I hope that you progress into a spirituality. But if you don't, you know, I'm not gonna judge you. I'm gonna continue to love you like Phoenix is doing, because this is hard and it's hard work. There's so much resistance against good, you know, but since the turn of time, it's always been good and evil. And I tell people, COVID is like the devil. It's the invisible enemy. And we've been fighting that all of our lives. All of our lives. And it's not gonna go away. But what we have to do is figure out how we're going to show up and how we are going to deal with it. So through all of this, you still have a comedic bone in your body. Tell me how you were doing comedy. What was that all about?
Well, I started doing comedy back in England as a hobby when I was working for Her Majesty's government. And it was kind of a nice counterpoint to get up. I don't really tell jokes, but certain things strike me as funny. And if something strikes me as funny, then I figure other people will laugh at it as well.
You British have a different sense of humor. A tad bit. And I say this with love. I say that sometimes it's a tad bit dry, or sometimes it can be utterly brutal.
We are breastfed on sarcasm. but we're genetically hardwired for politeness, and there's this real tension between I'd like to eviscerate you with my words, but I don't want to be rude, and that's the reason we all look a bit kind of it's like slightly constipated of oh I could but no don't ah go on you'd love to yeah I like telling Americans, you know, how it should be done. The particular conversation over here, obviously, is about the fact that Southerners have murdered perfectly good tea by putting ice in it.
My gosh. I know. Well, I had to get with it. You know, my daughter has traveled to Europe quite a bit. She loves it over there. And, you know, putting the milk in my tea. I couldn't get with that. But it is delightful.
It is. It is. And it serves a purpose. I mean, it's cold and disgusting over there. You wouldn't want ice in lots of drinks. You'd much prefer to have a nice hot cup of tea or a glass of warm beer.
I can't get with the warm beer.
I don't like beer at all. Beer is not my thing. I like expensive French wine.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, I have tastes beyond my means.
No, that's okay. You can have champagne taste and a root beer pocketbook. Ain't nothing wrong with it. Ain't nothing wrong.
Oh, you know, my childhood in one sentence.
Exactly. So thank you so much for being here on The Edge. Please tell my friends how to get in contact with you. I want to really kind of find out a little bit, you know, deeper about the work that you do. Maybe you have some online courses. How do they connect with you, Phoenix?
Let's see how we can do this. There we go. Yeah. Look at that.
Yeah. Just leave it there for a second.
Yep. So the email is good. The phone number is good. The website is good. I'm pretty good.
You are good. I love that. See, when they come to The Edge, they are prepared brains. They are prepared to do what it is to get the deed done, okay? Because we are here for you all the time on all different levels. You know, whether you believe, you don't believe, doesn't matter. We believe in you, and that's all that matters. So thank you again for being on The Edge. Brains, go back, subscribe right now. Okay, hit that subscribe button. Come back with some edgy conversations. Phoenix, I want you to come back and visit me and let me know what's going on. And tell the angels I said, hey.
Hey, right back at you, girl. This has been awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you, baby.